just gives out, so I'm going to have to feel that we can survive our time together.
Thank you. Yeah, let me just say, first of all, to all of you, that for Judy and me, this weekend has been a delight. Not because I had opportunity to speak. That's not what I mean at all. It's the fact of being able to meet you. Oh, man, we are in business. Yeah, let's go for it. That's all right.
You want anything else?
If somebody could give me one more for this side, it would balance it off a little. I tell you, these women take good care of me here. But really, it's been a delight to be with you, to meet you. I wish there was more opportunity just to get acquainted one-on-one, but that's not going to work. And unfortunately, this weekend for me has been, because of my energy level, I've had to slip away at times when there would have been opportunity to connect with you. I hope you understand why I had to do that. But I'm glad to be able to say a little bit about the work in the Faroe Islands, where I grew up. And so we will try to do that. Some of you don't know where the Faroe Islands is located. Well, there you have it. Up in the North Atlantic, there are 18 small islands, and the population of the country is 52,000 people. That's the total population. A small town here in the States, that's my whole country. And like I said, it takes about 2 hours to fly from Denmark, an hour and a half to fly from Iceland to the Faroe Islands. I'm going to show you a few pictures of this beautiful country and a little bit about the culture, and then we'll get into the work of the assemblies as well. Okay, there we go. If I stand over here and talk loud, can you still hear me? Okay. Are you sure you can hear me over there? All right. If you don't, just go like this, okay? And I'll walk out. If you go to the Faroe Islands, there's ways to do it. You can fly to the Faroe Islands. There's one airstrip or airport in the Faroe Islands. And it's actually small, but it's very, very modern today. You went there. And there's you can come in from Denmark, you can come in from Scotland and from Iceland several times a day from Denmark. But you can also go by ferry. Okay, there we are. Between Denmark and the Faroe Islands, every week you'll have a ferry of this kind that goes back and forth. It takes 2 days. It's kind of like a cruise to go on. That's when the weather's good. It's a nice cruise. Okay. Between the islands, though, we have ferries like this. Some of them are car ferries that would hold up to 100 cars that go between the islands. Or there are smaller ones that come out to the small islands where you could not land or come ashore with a boat. You go like that. And in this particular case, my family on board there when our boys were young, we had come to this island on a boat in the back, but you couldn't go on shore with that, so we had to go into the smaller boat that we rode at the back. So that's the way you go between the island. But today, there are tunnels. There's lots of tunnels. The Faroe Islands is a very holy country. There are lots of holes. through the country. This particular one goes under the ocean. It's about 9 miles long. No, not this one, okay. It's several miles long. It goes under the ocean and comes up on the other side over to my hometown. The Faroe flag, as you can see right there, I should say this too, that the Faroe Islands is under the Danish kingdom. The language is Faroese, not Danish. You should never, ever, ever call a Faroese person a Danish. That would be offensive. We are Faroese. I happen to be American now, but they're Faroese people, okay? But we have our own parliament, and this is our White House, okay? There's no Donald Trump here. This is a parliament. And 50,000 people, and we have six political parties. You think 50,000 people, that means there's only about 20,000 adults. So
Anyway, that's the part of the building, not very big. The scenery over there, this is my hometown. This is where I grew up. It was much smaller when I lived there. It's grown quite a bit since then. I've not lived there for 50-some years. But this is where my family is. My parents are with the Lord. I have a brother there and lots of cousins and stuff. So that's where we go when we go home. 5,000 people live in this particular little town. And this is what it looks like probably this morning. In the winter time, we have snow off and on. The weather there is really, the temperature is very moderate. We don't have the bitter, bitter cold weather like you have in Iceland and Greenland. That's because of the Gulf Stream. So we have, but it's actually lousy weather. Okay. Somebody asked me how long is the summer in the Faroe Islands. I told them last year it was on a Friday. That will give you an idea of what the weather really changes all the time, okay? But there are also smaller towns like this. And you can see there are no trees, hardly any. There are some planted, and there are no woods there at all. It's grass and rocks, but it has its own beauty. This is a typical house. It's actually the house where I was born, actually in the house, and raised in this particular house. It belongs to somebody else. But they also have houses that look like this, with a grass roof, and so if you're going to cut the lawn, you're going to risk your life cutting the lawn. So there's a variety of housing. They're all normally painted beautiful, and lots of gorgeous scenery, like this particular one here. I'm referring to Judy. Stormy weather for days on end, and so it's hard to get some of these places where the weather is like this. As the back view. Now the church, by the way, the bottom there, that will be a Lutheran church. We'll hear about that a little later. But the Lutheran churches are all over the Faroe Islands, the state church. But you have actually some beautiful scenery. Looks very, very different than Florida, right? Very different. The food over there, delicious. Okay. And all kinds of them. Sheep is a main thing. There are twice as many sheep in the Faroes as there are people. And mutton is the thing over there. We eat a lot of that. We have, of course, we have beef and stuff like that as well. But if, oh, yeah, and the sheep have the right of way on the road, by the way. Yeah, you do not want to run into a sheep with your car. It will cost you something. Not your life, but it will cost you a bit of money, okay? But there's all kinds of good food. Here I am enjoying some aged mutton, either raw. Oh, this is probably about 6-8 months old, okay? Now, to me, it's delicious. You probably wouldn't touch it. The thing is, it smells really strong. Really strong. But believe me, it's absolutely delicious. Don't believe me. No, it's not pure. It is all it is. We would, like when I grew up, my dad would buy about 6 sheep. He would slaughter them in our house, in our kitchen actually. We slaughtered them there. And we take them the meat, we hang it up to dry. We don't like any fresh stuff. We leave it hanging up for about 4 or 6 months, and then we eat it. We don't salt it or anything like that at all. And when we kill a sheep, we eat everything. So it's different. We also, usually we do whale hunting over there. I hope you don't mind. That's not a sport, but it's just for food, okay? And so this is whale meat that is dry, not cooked, the black part there. And then you have some boiled potatoes, and then you have whale blubber, fat, raw, not cooked. Now, Judy and I, when we were there last, We were with some dear friends in the town. I was preaching in a small assembly, and they invited us over for snacks at night, and this was about 11 o'clock at night. They served us that. 11 o'clock at night, we sat there and enjoyed some whale blubber, raw, uncooked, and some whale meat. And why are you shaking your head? You want some, right? I get hungry just thinking about it. But hey, listen, how many of you like peanut butter?
Yeah.
Ladies are really good on not just making the dinners, but for sweets and making all kinds of things. If you go to a home in the Faroe Islands, the wife in that house, the lady, she will never just offer you a cup of coffee. That ain't gonna happen. She will offer you coffee or tea, yes, but she will always have some sweets with her. And not just one kind. It may be pound cake, it may be cookies, it may be a torte, it could be all kinds of things. They are great when it comes to that. And every time I go to the Faroe Islands, I gain weight. Because I don't want to offend the ladies, so I just eat everything they put before me. But really, food is a big thing over there, and as you visit with one another. And there you see a few of the things that are made at home. Fishing is the main industry. Probably 70% of the men are involved in the fishing industry in some form or another. And this is one of the trawlers that you go on there. Some are bigger than that, some are smaller than that. And this is one of them. And he has just caught about, I don't know. In the net, there are probably, 20 ton of fish in one haul, okay? Yeah, it's big stuff over there, and it's exported. And those guys have the smaller boats too for sports fishing and stuff. So that's the Faroe Island, that's where I grew up. So if you think I'm a little odd, that's the reason. That's where I came from, speaking. And the language is Faroese. But the voices he used to see are quite as the word we take in a first school. Do you snatch your first school? So she there said to her, so she that we hate us not we take them. Right?
Okay.
I said this. She understood what I said. I said, there's no point in me talking to you in Faroese, because if I talk to you in Faroese, you're going to stop looking at me like you're dummies and don't understand. That's why I said to you in Faroese. Sorry for all you dummies in Faroese. It's not that you want to put it in Faroese. That's the Faroese language. Okay, the spread of the gospel. The first missionary that came there that preached the gospel of grace was Andrew William Sloan. Okay? And that is over. He was born in Scotland in 1838. And he died in 1914. At that time, there were no evangelical churches of any kind in the Faroe Islands when he came. And he started the work in Edinburgh with, I'll go through this information pretty quick here, about his life. But through some fishermen, he heard about the islands up there, the North Atlantic, and that there were very little interest in spiritual things. And so this is from his diary, actually, from back then. And he understood there was no missionary work going on at that time in the islands, and he was let to go there to preach. And there was a very little interest, actually. He said, therefore, I feel constrained and willing to go to work there. This was quite a jump for him to go from Scotland, not speaking Faroese, and he didn't speak Danish either, actually. He learned it as he started to visit there. But he went off there anyway to share the gospel with our people and my people, right? He said at one point, I feel helpless, but strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. He came from a small assembly in Scotland when he went up there. At age 25, he arrived, 27, with a few Danish Bibles, a Danish grammar, an English-Danish dictionary and a letter of recommendation from a gentleman businessman. That's how you arrived there. Not speaking the language, but in the Faroe Islands, everybody is bilingual, or tri, or four languages. Languages, that's just part of it. There's nobody that is, like most Americans, a monolingual, only speaks English. We don't, they all speak at least Faroese and Danish, and probably can manage in Norwegian, and now English have become very, very common. So, language is not a big deal, as far as that goes. He felt homesickness. And he started to travel to the villages. At that time, there were no underwater tunnels, there were no big boats or anything like that. Rowboats were used to travel between the islands, and with strong currents, which is indeed true, many boats disappeared during those journeys. That's just to go between the islands. That's how it started, but rough going, and alcohol and its abuse was plentiful. The Lutheran Church was there. It's still there. It's a state church. Most of the people in the Lutheran Church, I have to say, are not believers. They believe in baptismal regeneration, and it's their religion. There are some believers, but that's the state church, and the head of the state church, of course, is the Queen of Denmark, and with all the things that are related to that. So, but the response was slow. He started making trips. Listen, 13 years, he worked in the Faroes without one single convert. How do you like that? 13 years, no fruit. But he believed that we shall reap if we don't faint. Let's not be weary in well doing. And so he did. And there were two children at first. And the interesting thing was, because of his testimony to these two, Andreas, Andreas as we would call him, later was saved. And he was the first one to be baptized as a believer. And the gal there was saved and baptized and later became his wife. So he went up there. I came to the States to find a wife. He went to the Faroe Islands. I think I made the better choice. But okay, the brethren assemblies of the Pharaohs have multiplied over the years. Now, keep in mind here, think about a town of 50,000 people here in Florida, okay? And today, what you're going to see is that God has richly blessed the islands. He really has. Now, this happened to be me speaking in my own church, and I used an overhead PowerPoint and that stuff. I guess I spoke on Mark 2. I don't remember that particular picture, but that's where they're from. This man, Victor Dyer, was a school teacher by trade. He had to walk with a cane, actually, but he did an incredible job. I know him, and Judy met him as well. He's with the Lord today. This guy translated the entire Bible into Faroese, and that edition was published in 1949. Imagine, the fact that there were no computers, lots of stuff was just written by hand, and so on, but he did an incredible job. Listen to what this guy did. He translated composed many of the hymns in the Faroese hymn book. Of the 1,192 songs in our hymnal in my assembly, this guy either composed or translated the majority. And he translated the Bible. And he translated some books into Faroese. And he preached. And he was an elder. So he was one busy man. God used him. But that's the Faroese Bible. And we have it today. And here we have, I'm going to see the yellow dots all over. That's where the assemblies are in the Faroes, okay? All the way from here, there are several here, there's one there, a number of them are there, here. This is my hometown up here. By the way, the airport is over here. And these are small assemblies. Some of them are really small because the town may only have 40 people in it. So you're not gonna have 50 people in an assembly that are 40 people in it. that's just the way. But the Lord has blessed. This is Ebenezer Hall, it's called, in Torshaven, in the capital city, and it seats 1,500, okay, people. It's, yeah, now there are 15,000 people. This is a larger city, 50,000 people live here, and this is one of the assemblies. There are three others in the municipality. At least, but this is a smaller one. Here I'm visiting a small assembly in one of the smaller islands. We have quite a few of these in the Faroe Islands, where there are 20 people that meet every Sunday morning to break bread and to preach of the gospel Sunday night. This is my home church. This is where I grew up, in this particular one. This picture was taken in 1970, and today, this is the building. They built a new building that seats about 1,000 people. And as I said, the Lord has, when you think about those islands up in the North Atlantic, there's a brother that worked for 13 years without one single convert. I'm so glad he didn't quit after 12 years because of what you see today. This is my home. Some of the ministries and the assemblies, and these 30 assemblies or so, they work closely together. They're not all identical in the way they, can I say, run their meetings. There are some that are doctrinally the same, but some are a little more structured in terms of having scheduled speakers. When I grew up, when we went to church, to the meeting, on a Sunday night for a gospel service, there might be 300 people there. No one, and I mean no one, knew who was going to speak. No one knew what songs we were going to sing, because all is the pulpit. If I, as a young believer, wanted to request a song, I just called it out, like here this morning. If I wanted to go up and have a testimony, I would just go up to the pulpit and have a testimony. Or if I wanted to go up and preach, I could go up and preach as a young person or an older person. Or if Dave wanted to go up and preach for 2 hours, he could. 2 hours, a little long, but... No, but you could. It was an open pulpit in that sense. That's how I grew up. And which is very different from it. And I understand very well why we have a more structured here. There, one reason you can do that, because you know everybody that's coming. Even the unbelievers. Everybody knows everybody. So you're not going to have some stranger coming. Now, there are some challenges with an open pulpit. Tell you something we have, but anyway. This is a choir in my home assembly. Okay? So we are greatly blessed that way. Coffee fellowship. I know that the assemblyship coffee fellowship is what you have between the bread and morning bread. This is not what this is. This is actually in the foyer of my home assembly. Every Thursday morning at 10 o'clock till noon, there's a door open and people can come and just have a cup of coffee, visit everyone, believers, unbelievers, it doesn't matter, just to visit with one another. And three or four guys will just sit here and entertain with harmonica and sing songs and stuff. But it's just a time for fellowship and to connect with one another. There's a great children's ministry going on. This is the camp that all the assemblies use together. They have several thousand kids go there every summer. And then in the fall, there are Bible conferences of various kinds. As you can see there, children, youth, camp for handicapped people, for family, assembly groups gone, women's conferences, men's conferences, etc. It's used, it's owned by all the assemblies. And there's a committee of people that oversee it, that represent the assemblies. And family camp, we have that there as well, where families would come. There are other times when it's like handicapped, I come, there may be 200 handicapped people there with their helpers as the assemblies minister to them. And food, of course, is always there. This is my home assembly. Every Friday, once a month on Friday morning, there is a senior get-together where the seniors, not just in the assembly, but others that don't attend the assembly will come, and it's just for coffee and food and the fellowship, and there's a little program afterwards of some kind, and various what that might be. And ladies' meetings take place as well, and you can see, food is very important. They're always having some things to eat. And these are Bible conferences in the Faroe Islands. Every year, actually twice a year, there's a Bible conference in the Southern Island or up north, where the believers from the various assemblies come together for about 3 days of a conference. That could be at Easter or at, well, we celebrate Pentecost over there too. And so we could be doing that holiday as well. So that's what you have in Paris. As a result of God blessing, there's a number of missionaries that have gone out, okay? There's this little boat that's seen on that. You don't see the boat too well there, but that particular boat goes to Greenland from the Faroe Islands every summer for about 2 months. A crew of men and some women will go, and they go from village to village in Greenland to share the gospel. Again, here they Faroese speak Danish. The Greenlanders, many of them speak Danish or use a translator, and so they go there. And this is just when they left, when we were there, and people from our assembly come down. This is my hometown. And to sing and to wish them well as they left. We would sing as the boat left the pier, we would all start singing to the people on the ship and ask God be with you till we meet again. And so it was fascinating to be there and to see that happening. So that's what we have. I mentioned to you that I went to Iceland. Yeah, that is me on the right. three of us went. Iceland as teenagers, basically, as 17, 18-year-old, to serve the Lord, to share about the Lord. And today, that's us three, 56 years later, and we're all involved in ministry today. So we're greatly blessed that way. And I'll just end with this particular one. This was in 89, when our assembly in Bethesda Hall in Plaxby invited all the missionaries that are connected with our assembly. Actually, they flew us home for this conference. They have not done that since. And that is just from our assembly, commended workers that are scattered all over, from Papua New Guinea to the Philippines to Greenland and Africa. I mean, all over the place. That's just from the one assembly in Paris. And there are other assemblies that send people out as well. So you can see that God has really bless the country in a great way, but there are also many, many challenges in the Faroes these days, because we live in a fallen world and there are various issues that the assemblies there have to deal with. But I was privileged to be born in and raised in that country, and have had a chance to be commended by this particular assembly to serve the Lord. So I think that's it. Do you have any questions? What are we done now? More detail. Do you have any questions for me? Yes.
Can you give us a feel for the distance? Like you showed where your hometown is and where the airport is, how far a distance is that?
Yeah, okay, the good question. to drive there today would only take an hour and 15 minutes, Judy? 1 hour? 1 hour, because of the fact you can go through the tunnels. When she went to the Faroe Islands the first time, which was back in 1970. We arrived on the island. We had to drive for an hour, take a boat across to the next island, which took half hour, drive over the mountains, which took an hour and a half, probably, took another boat across, which took another half hour, drove another 2 hours, okay, to another place, took a boat, half hour to get across. And today, the piece of cake, really. Yeah. The distances aren't long, but it's just the mountains and stuff. Any other question for me?
Only.
Yeah.
You said there's 52,000 people in the islands.
Yeah.
But it looks like there are a number of thousand of those 52 there. It looks like they're in just in assembly fellowship.
Yeah.
There may be 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people.
I would say probably 5,000, Judy. At least, yeah. There, yeah. The like my home assembly, because it's a fishing community, you will have a lot of men that are gone, so you never have everybody together, right? But in my understanding was that when they checked in my assembly, there were, was it 800 baptized believers, Judy? Yeah, I think. That's in my home. And the other one in the capital city is a little larger yet. So, yeah, I mean, there's no, that, and that is, in the Faroe Islands, there are, don't tell the Baptist, but there are no Baptist churches in the Faroe Islands, okay? We don't need them. Sorry, if you're a Baptist, that's fine. But it's interesting because when I was, it's still the truth, when people want to speak derogatorily about the people in the assembly, in the assemblies, guess what we are called in the Faroe Islands? Baptister. We're called Baptist. But that's not a, is a derogatory thing. It's said in a derogatory way because we baptize by immersion. Remember, your people, like my parents were saved out of the Lutheran church and so on. So that has been always been, a, been an issue there. Yeah. Yeah. I would say this. It's hard to just focus on one. I think the clarity of the gospel is definitely one, okay? That there's no question about the gospel of grace being proclaimed. But I think the other part has been the emphasis from the very beginning that all of us have a responsibility to participate in getting the gospel out. So we were encouraged as a young believers. Now, mind you, see, in my home church, as a young guy, say 13 years old, and I didn't know the scriptures. But I had opportunity to go up and share my testimony. And as I learned better, I could go up and give a five-minute message and so on. And that type of thing. And the other part I would say is this, the mentoring that took place. That is old. I can think of some older men that took us under their wings and took us with them as young guys to other villages. We had boats. We had a boat that we called, it was called the Messenger. That belonged to the assembly in my hometown. It was there for the purpose of going to other towns where there at that time were no believers. But the older guy, they were not really that old. Now that I think of it, they just seemed old back then. I was young. But they were probably in their 40s, 50s. That's not old. Good grief, that's young. But they would never go alone. They would always take us, 14-year-old, 15-year-olds, with us to these villages where we'd have an open-air meeting and we could again share our testimony. I would say that that would be a key, is the fact of that there was never a reliance on the elders to do the work or just a selected few to do the work. It was the other, I would say. I could tell you there are some interesting things happen in a dynamic like that, like the open pulpit thing. Because all of a sudden you'll have somebody go up, right? Because I mean, here 300 people have come to church, okay, on Sunday night to listen. And I remember one particular time, and all of a sudden a guy is coming up. When he gets up there, I realize who it is. And he was my friend, my age. He was not walking with the Lord at all. He had a bad testimony and talk, but he loved to be in front of people and talk. And all of a sudden, he's in the pulpit. You know what the elder said? Brother, come down. He wouldn't let him speak. So though the pulpit was open, it wasn't open. It wasn't. Because the elders, when you have to have elders that are alert, right? And he came down. Guess what that reminded me of, though? I better not run up there. I better make sure that we had some other funny story. I mean, I can remember an older guy, too, that he was older. He was older. Why am I saying older? I was probably in the 60s at that time. But anyway, it's not old. I am the old guy. But anyway, And he was kind of a unique guy. He loves to talk. He was very sharp and knew the scripture some, but he was a little strange and would come up with doctrine that was not quite right. So he would go up there and talk, and it was finished, and many of us knew this is not quite right. And finally, the elders met with him and said, "Brother, you cannot be in the pulpit anymore. You cannot. We cannot allow you to be in the pulpit." So, what does this guy do? I'll tell you what he did. He was sitting back here. A week later, he's up there. But he's not in a pulpit, he's in front of the pulpit. And spoke. I mean, you have those kinds of dynamics going on that kind of make you laugh today. But in spite of those imperfections, let me tell you something. One of the culture shocks I had when I came to the States, remember this, I grew up in a Brethren assembly where everything was open, and we felt that God, the Spirit was leading the meetings and so on. I was in training. I went to a church. It was a Bible church of some kind. And I walk in a foyer, and I'm handed, guess what? A bulletin. I had never seen such a thing. And I look at it. You mean they've already decided what we're going to sing? What we're going to... I could not believe that God could lead that way. Now, I believe he can, by the way. That's not my point. My point is, it was a cultural difference for me to come here from a situation where everything was open to this. Both have their challenges. You have an open meeting on Pharaoh's, like I said, there are some challenges. Believe me, there are for those assemblies. But the other is also a challenge when you get so structured that you don't give the Spirit of God room to move. And I better stop. Thank you. We take a break here, right? Yeah.